Well, before I start, I just want to say thank you all to all the attendees. It's great, you know, presentations go a lot smoother when there's people and not chairs. So thank you. So what I'm here to talk about today is, as you can see up on the screen, examining the role of social networks and venue-based HIV testing access and decision-making in an urban transgendered population. I do have a conflict of interest, but however, none of the Johnson & Johnson products, nor their research activities or pharmaceutical research plays any part in my work. However, I do see it quite on a daily basis because it's part of the context of my work setting. However, they did not influence any form of this presentation. Lastly, just a few acknowledgments before I begin. I'd like to thank the City of El Paso Department of Public Health for supplying me their data, giving me access to some of the people that seek services there. Not only that, Evergreen Healthcare Services for also allowing me access to their databases. And these two individuals are my co-authors. Up there is Dr. Andrew Spieldenner. He's an assistant professor out at Hofstra University. And my mentor and co-author, Devina Porak. And she's the dean for research, associate dean for research up at University at Buffalo. So just a few things that I hope we walk away with today. Some of these objectives describe demographics of two urban LGBTQ subpopulations, explain a new theoretical foundation for social network research in marginalized communities, and I do hope that we can walk away with listing some public health nursing implications. So just a little bit of a background of how I came to this project. So this is really an extension for my dissertation work. One of the findings that I had in my dissertation was that when I looked at the trans population, it seems that they had the highest number of HIV tests and highest number of HIV infections. So anyone who does HIV research knows that doesn't quite fit the cascade of treatment, right? Thing is, though, higher HIV testing usually leads to good outcomes. And what I mean by good outcomes, linkage to care. If they test negative, they tend to stay negative, so on and so forth. So can you see why this jumped out at me? And not only that, when we were talking almost like 80, 90 percentiles in that. So what I did is I expanded on that. And that got me thinking about the trans population. And since I relocated to Buffalo, which is in Western New York and not New York City, I started with looking at the state database system. And this is basically, as you're reading through New York State's plan for HIV, and I think the Governor Cuomo just recently came up with a plan to end HIV, so this might be a little outdated, but nonetheless, what we know about trans population groups, it's still pretty much the same. So as you can see, another group that received considerable attention during this consultation was transgender persons, particularly what are commonly referred to as male to female. It was recommended that while surveillance data do not currently include sufficient transgender information to adequately describe the HIV/AIDS epidemic in New York State with regard to transgender persons. So as you can see, this is just, it's already self-limiting, right? So what to do, right? So I looked at next step was looking at some of the literature that's out there. There is quite a bit of work already. You know, a lot of people think that it's under research. Actually, there's a lot of good work, and even more if you just look at what's being funded right now by NIH. It's really a lot of fabulous work. But anyway, what's existing in the evidence right now is that we do know that trans population groups have unique health needs and varying HIV health disparities. And this comes, I pulled that out straight from the IOM's report. It's probably about 3 years old now, that focuses on some of the health issues of the LGBTQ population. However, some of the gaps, right, in the literature are, well, it says nothing about why and I'm sorry for the automatic, that just kind of keeps me, kind of in my time limits, but I threw that out the window. So the varying HIV testing rates, there's nothing really in there why trans individuals have the highest number of HIV infections. there's nothing that really explains or the rationale behind the reported risk behaviors. And also, one common element is that they are the lowest socioeconomic status of all the groups, regardless of the study. So to talk more a little bit about the literature, so in a nutshell, when I looked at New York State specifically, it focuses on the downstate urban areas. As anyone who's from New York State, Western New York is a little bit different than downstate, the New York City urban areas. However, this goes to show, though, that in all, most of the trends lit and the trends evidence out there comes from large cities, Los Angeles, Miami. I don't think there's too much Miami, but there's Miami, San Francisco, and Washington, Baltimore. Also, they tend to describe this story. I'm not sure if it's just research, us researchers that like to have causal cookie-cutter relationships that we can apply to everybody, but I don't know what it is. It just didn't seem quite right to me, and I labeled it the transgender trajectory. So what is that in a nutshell? Well, the causal relation or the causal trajectory is this, is that trans individuals are stigmatized or discriminated against because of their gender expression. So therefore, they don't get employment because they still need to sustain themselves. They turn to, they turn to sex work to deal with any issues with and coping mechanisms that are associated with sex work. They turn to substance use and so on and so forth. So in that time frame, alongside, there's risk behavior after risk behavior after more risk behavior. So as you can see, I'll be honest, I really kind of threw that because a close friend of mine, trans and a sex worker, she did, she told me, I don't do it because I can't get a job. It's just I like being a sex worker. So, I think we really need to reevaluate this. And also, I can't really get into why I started bringing in the border in, but however, it's in this work now. And when you look at the literature, if there's anything about trans communities on the border, they're non-existent. There may be some mention, but it's usually in the context of an investigation that was done with IV drug use or sex work, and not too much else about the community and the social networks and things like that. So that said, this brings me to my research questions, right? So some of these research questions that I thought would address some of the gaps in the literature are as follows. I'll only read a few of them just because of time limitations. So I want to find out how does awareness of HIV testing, risk behaviors, and post-test benefits circulate through a trans community social network? What are the circumstances involved in high-risk activity? Who are the individuals involved with awareness and associated with high-risk behaviors? So as you can see, these are all really social network type of questions. Right? Not that I already had sought out the social network, but as I was putting these, trying to address gaps in the literature, these questions really said, I think the best way to answer these questions are social network analysis. Okay, and anyone for the PhD students, I think it's pretty much that's a cookie cutter thing. You let your literature findings kind of dictate your research question, and your research question dictates the methodology. I think I got that right. So it's only been 2 years, but it's really a haze. Anyway, so this is why I decided to, aside from the questions that I was asking, pointing to a social network analysis, these were some other ideas. So the thing is, though, the questions I have, since we really have nothing, right? I mean, we have a small amount of literature. And not only that, the type of work that I do, which is in harm reduction, what keeps trans communities in and out of healthcare settings, regardless of what the setting is, so on and so forth. And why they tend to be at higher risk? Why are there so many enacted behaviors? So it not only I had to tweak it a little bit. So not only the traditional social network analysis, where you have the nodes and try to connect everybody to everyone and try to identify where these people are going and so on and so forth, I had to take a different approach. Well, I had to look at the traditional social, yes, but the sexual and the communication/discourse networks, right? What are they saying? Who are they saying it to? What are they doing? Who are they having sex with? Why are they having sex? So on and so forth. Another thing is it evaluates connections and interrelations. Evaluates interaction between individuals, organizations, and systems. And this is very relevant to those of us that do community-based work, right? We always try to see how can we access this population group, right? And you'll be surprised, though, that the trans groups all across the board tend to be highly accessible to community-based organizations, right? So this adds another little bit of a dilemma, right? And I use the examples of New York City. When you look at places like down at the border out in Buffalo, right, they tend to be still a little, to be marginalized and have those characteristics of a marginalized community, hard to reach, so on and so forth. And not only that, this just taken from some of the bread and butter social network stuff, it allows flexible network and context construction. As I was putting this together, and I was thinking about the literature at the same time, I said, you know what, they're missing a huge feminist framework that works absolutely wonderful in a lot of circles. Why aren't they using it in transgender health, right? So I said, well, let's try to apply some of this, some of the intersectionality work, right? In a nutshell, I wish I had my, my week-long lecture on intersectionality, but however, we're limited. So what intersectionality is in a nutshell, and, everybody has their own definitions of it, but my understanding of it is, and I say this because it is a feminist framework and it's coming from the male perspective, I will say we have to, my understanding of it is essentially different levels of identity or marginalized identity intersect, resulting in greater marginalization. So what does that look like, or how is that operationalized? Basically, if you're trans, you're poor, and you're a person of color, your marginalization will be greater or heavier, right, as the picture shows here, than someone who is trans, poor, but not a person of color. And this is where different dynamics play into part. I'm leaving out quite a bit of things. It's just the thing is, though, the way society works. And again, coming from a critical social perspective, I'm convinced that racial frameworks play a big part in health and other types of infrastructure, social infrastructures. So anyway, just to give you a little bit of a background. So as I started this social network analysis, so when you do one, and you know what the IRB said yes to, so it's like, okay, so I'm going to access this population group. I'm going to start with the demographics. I'm going to contact these individuals to see if they want to come aboard this study. So that part, the demographics, right, and this is from Western New York, as you can see, very small. Now, Buffalo is not small. It's small compared to New York City, but it's about the same size as New Orleans, right? The New Orleans metro area is about 1.5 million, I think, was the last count. Buffalo also, it's about 1.2 million. The thing about this, so we have to expand it to Western New York, right? And when you see Western New York, it fits the profile of some of our neighbors down south, which is Pittsburgh. So when you look, and what I mean by Western New York, for those of you that really aren't familiar with the area, we're about an hour away from Toronto, Canada, to the north or across the lake. But basically anything from Lake Ontario to Lake Erie down to the Pennsylvania border, we have about 2.4, 2.5 million people. Okay, lots of rural, right, and it's a lot of area, right? It's just basically if you take New York State, just cut the Hudson River, you know, cut a little bit off for central New York and the Finger Lakes, that's Western New York. Borders basically all of Pennsylvania. All right. Now, here's the thing, though. I started kind of breaking it apart into, okay, how am I going to present these groups? What's the best way of looking at them? Well, obviously the first one, you know, age, it starts with A, right? So we'll start there. So out of the 27 people, as you can see, I was actually a little surprised, though, because I do some work at Evergreen, and this doesn't really fit the profile. I mean, I see a lot of young MSN, gay, lesbian, questioning, all sorts. But really, it didn't fit this profile. But here, you know, the largest group was the 30 to 39 year old. And I fall in that category, right? So I thought, it's like, wow, I can recognize, right? I thought I was way older, but, you know, I guess not. Compared to when you look at the data. Now, that said, though, is that when you see, I think what was surprising is when you see the 40, the 50, and the 60-year-olds, they're all about the same, right? Now, you're probably saying, well, let's break it down by race. Let's break it down to, let's look at some detail. Hence the next slide. So I did stratify this by race, right? Remember, this is 27 people. There's 27 people. So when you look at it by race, the largest group were white, second largest group were black, Hispanics, then unreported. Anyway, so I thought this was interesting, though, because if you look at it, the youngest of all these groups are Hispanics, right? The ones who have the most stable housing, right, which is very relevant when it comes to HIV or staying along the cascade of care, the white population had more stable housing. Just in the sake of time, when you look at it, when you expand it to Erie County, Niagara County, or what we call Western New York, versus what's happening in this one center, right? You can see that there is some overlap, but I thought this was very surprising. So in Western New York, the highest number of HIV positive tests, right, were reported in the white population. But what's going on there? Let's not be fooled by numbers, right? African Americans or blacks, regardless of Hispanic ethnicity, they comprise only about 19-20% of the Western New York population. But yet, when you look at it, right, they still comprise almost half of the HIV infection rates. Same thing when those that came in with already an HIV diagnosis, or I mean an AIDS diagnosis, right? And that's usually opportunistic infections, T-cell counts, so on and so forth. As you can see, again, African Americans disproportionately affected with it. Now, when you look at Evergreen, it kind of follows the same pattern, but one surprising thing. Those that came in with an HIV diagnosis after their test, all of them were African American. So anyway, just some other variables that I was looking at that I think would help me out as I'm making sense of these individuals' network, right? So who were substance users? As you can see, mostly all of them were. Or no, I'm sorry, all of them were. Some were incarcerated. Second largest were homeless, sex worker, and history of sexual abuse. Now, just some findings from my other site, right, on the Texas-Mexico border. And I put that with Old Mexico because people were saying, oh, so are you talking about Carlsbad? For those of you that are, you know, more familiar with that area. Now, I was talking about, like, the southern border. And it kind of, I guess because New Mexico is in there, makes sense. Anyway, so just some interesting demographics here. Gender expressions. I had 5 male to female transgender and 2 female, and that 2 female to males, and that was actually pretty high. These are from focus groups, I should add. Sex work, a male to females, 3 of them, and none in the female to male. All of them were substance, had reported substance usage. All of them had reported sex with an anonymous sex partner. Only 1 female to male trans individual had an STD. All of them have been assaulted at some point in time. So just in general, so what are some of the salient findings from these focus groups? Sex work, IV drug use, but in the sense of not so much injecting heroin. It's actually sharing needles because of the hormone circles, and they're very prevalent in Mexico. Okay, and that's just because it's easier access there. It's not this lawless land. It's really just because you can really go get penicillin, you can get hormones without prescriptions, just depending on where you go. Again, substance use and trauma-associated issues. There was some suicide attempts in the data. I wish I had more time to really bring out some of the findings. But anyway, so just some of the more, I'll just kind of go through these. One individual, male to female, felt isolated, fell into a depression because family didn't understand, thought maybe to commit suicide, but never did. One actually, a good salient, or I thought was very interesting, was the female to male. And this, he's talking about her family. They don't like it at all. They absolutely hate it. I don't try to dress so much around them. My family will be, I couldn't really understand that from the tape the whole time. So on and so forth. They are very religious. They're embarrassed about it. And then, again, I had to just redact some locations. I'm down to 2 minutes, so enough of the findings. Just real quick, so where am I going with this? This is what the multi-network analysis looks like now, right? Data collection happens at all points in time. The data analysis will happen simultaneously, right? So what is this starting to look like? Grounded theory, right? Well, the grounded theory is exactly what I decided to do. I wish I had more time to discuss my goals. Anyway, why I decided to do grounded theory? Because we have nothing to work off of, especially when you're looking in these very, I don't want to say isolated, but there's really no work that can feed into some of the science that has existing evidence and science that we can go off of. So these are just some of the steps. The thing about grounded theory is that a lot of these processes aren't sequential. They're actually overlapping. And again, another big thing about grounded theory is that you're supposed to not come in with any preconceptions. There's strategies for that. What I liked is that we can throw that transgender trajectory out. And not only that, any findings, any data, any theory development comes from the data itself. So anyway, this is what it'll look like. So once this grounded theory approach is completed, it should, I think that will give me a better start off the multi-level analysis. And just some implications here real quick. So one of our goals as public health nurses, we improve public health infrastructure. Well, what are we doing? We can not only we can align ourselves with our colleagues in the public health arena, but we can use these findings to construct more complex network delineation, very specific to the community that we're looking at. And lastly, expanding. One of the things that we strive to do is expand access to public health and healthcare services. I think by using this, we can be more strategic, right? And we can actually focus our resources that are already limited as is, but to be successful with certain hard-to-reach marginalized populations, because in reality, we only have one shot to really get as much information and intervene as much as we can. So in all, just a restatement of the objectives. I'm sorry that I went super fast when I rehearsed. It wasn't that. It was a lot slower. Anyway, questions, I'm open. References are available by request. Please, any questions, concerns, comments, email. I don't like email, phone calls. I love voicemails, but I don't answer my phone. And if you're calling me from Mexico, as I know some colleagues are from out of the country, my Mexico number is on the bottom. So with that, I thank you. And we have questions? No? Am I out of time? All right. So thank you, everybody.